Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, and this is a repeat. I will be doing the Mental Health Summit today, so this is a repeat of the show from December 30th, 2015.
All right, so I'll get a little intro going here, and you can interrupt me if somebody raises a hand, because as you know, my preference is to take calls, and I try to approach these shows prepared to talk for the whole hour if I need to, but always hoping people will call in with comments or questions or testimonials of how this work is helping them. And this work specifically, for the recap, is the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness. And forgiveness is this tool for reaching inside myself and removing anything that doesn't belong in me. And in order to remove what doesn't belong in me, I have to have a definition of what does belong in me and what doesn't. And the ancient Aramaic had the understanding that as human beings, we're meant to, because we are created from this energy of creation, some call it love, and because we were created by this energy of creation, some call it love, we're made of this stuff, some call love. And that's what we're meant to have as our conscious experience 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round. And sometimes when we say that, people have an objection and they say, well, you're trying to tell me that my anger is a bad thing, or that I shouldn't have upset, or I shouldn't have fear, or I shouldn't have sadness or grief. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this system is this mind-body energy system, this creation device, is beyond my comprehension with my conscious logical mind. And it's a system that is so well designed and put together that everything that's in it is there for a reason. And if that's the case, it would be really important for me to know what's the reason for my having sadness, anger, fear, grief, hostility, confusion, tension. And one thing I'm offering is the purpose for those energies which feel discordant, tense, painful, disruptive, uncomfortable, whatever you want to call them, the purpose of it is to give me the feedback to tell me that my focus is inaccurate, that what I'm using to focus my conscious attention on is something that is creating discomfort, and that's not what I'm designed for. So it's like a feedback system to tell me, hey, Tim, your thoughts are off the mark, you're focusing on the wrong thing, you've chosen the wrong few bits of information from your senses. And back up, take a breath, center on your true nature as the energy of love, and then try again. Reassemble the input. Ask to be shown a higher level of integration of the information, or to choose different parts of the information that are hitting your senses, or what's getting resonated from your past. Reevaluate it. Dismantle what doesn't belong there, and return your focus to your true nature, that your conscious awareness should be on your true nature all the time, and that is this energy of creation, this energy of love, this energy of compassion. And when I do that, moment to moment, I create an experience of my true nature moment to moment, and then I'm creating an experience of love. I'm creating an experience of expansion, extension, acceptance, compassion, inclusion, union. And that's what the tool of forgiveness is all about. It helps me use the warning signals that appear in my awareness, and some would call them energies of pain or sadness or grief or loss or confusion or guilt or shame or anger, frustration. But if I use them as a guidance system, like a Geiger counter or a compass, to help me realize when my focus is off the mark, then I can also use that system in conjunction with a tool like the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness to remove from my energy system what doesn't belong there. And the more I clear out the stuff that doesn't belong there, the easier it is for me to experience and shift my focus to my true nature as this energy of love, and then extend that love to everyone and everything in every relationship in my life. And the more I do that, the easier it gets to do. It's amazing how well I've been conditioned by my culture to focus on those things which produce discomfort, anger and fear and tension, physical discomfort, negative emotional states, negative thought patterns. And I've been conditioned into that day after day, week after week for decades. And I was born into an energy system that inherited from both sides of my bloodline the same kinds of unproductive, tense, anger-filled, competition-filled patterns and belief systems. And I got it from both my mom's side and my dad's side that goes back infinitely. And then ever since I was born, I've been raised in a culture that's based on old false beliefs and competition and false separations, one person from another, one skin color from another, one geographic location from another, one political belief system from another, one religious belief system from another. And these false separations, these ideas and beliefs, have been used in the culture that I was born in and raised in for centuries to justify all manner of horrific abuses, from shunning to torture to death to wars to sarcasm to ridicule. False separations, false identifications, artificial, arbitrary lines of delineation based on a few tiny bits of information hitting our senses, and based on a history inherited from all kinds of people who were not living with a direct focus on their conscious nature, conscious awareness of their true nature as love. And I inherited that, and I lived in it for decades. So I've been trained and conditioned to believe I'm right, you're wrong, it's settled, why argue? And of course, when you happen to have a different opinion than mine, I've been trained to believe that if you're somebody that I want the approval of, I should give up my opinion and adopt yours. And if you're not somebody whose approval I want, I will argue with you. I will move to the level of actual antagonism, actual physical aggression, to prove I'm right and you're wrong. And if that's been happening in my life on both of my parents' sides and all generations back for as long as time goes, and I inherited the energetic and genetic impressions of that, And then I had 35 or 40 years of conditioning in this culture into that belief system. I've got a lot of work to do to undo those conditioning patterns, to build a new habit. And the invitation of this work is to start anew. Please don't make a New Year's resolution. I really like the way Abraham Hicks says this. Last year, in January, she gave a talk and she said, don't make a New Year's resolution. This one's already come and already gone and you've already ruined it. Make a new moments resolution. Begin to train yourself to observe in the moment and question anew. Begin in each moment to return your focus to your breath, to shift the focus of your conscious awareness to your true nature. Begin a new moments resolution and pick up the tools. Pick the ones that fit you best. And make a commitment to yourself, to your potential as a creator of a new, loving, positive, more expansive, joyful lifestyle. And apply your conscious awareness moment to moment to the application of tools that make your life better. And I'm happy if you're doing that with whatever tool suits you. The Sedona Release Method, Ho'oponopono, Byron Katie's work, the schools of religious science, the schools of Christian science, the schools of unity teachings, Martha Creek's work out of unity. Whichever set of tools resonates with you, pick it up, apply it, make a new moments resolution in each new moment to monitor your internal experience for an indication that your alarm is going off, that you're feeling anything less than love, that you're having any thoughts that are less than loving and inclusive, that you're doing anything other than identifying the true nature of creative force flowing through you and what it wants you to accomplish, that you keep your intention focused on the purity of that energy of creation, that you allow it to be there without resistance from you, that you surrender fully to that experience in the presence of each new moment, and that you remember with humility, and humility from the ancient Aramaic definition of the ability to identify the highest and best in everyone and everything you see, and then choose actively in the moment to cooperate only with that highest and best. Then you will resonate with the highest and best energies that it is potential for you to resonate with. You will extend those energies which are highest and best, and you will create in each new moment from your resolution to do so a better, more loving, more creative, more joyful, more expansive, more inclusive life experience in each moment. Now, in this work, the primary tool for that is called the Reality Management Worksheet, and that's available on the website that Dr. Michael Rice and Jeannie have tirelessly constructed with thousands of pages. And the website is www.whyagain.org. And there's a link on that page that looks like a red and white bullseye. And if you click on that link, it takes you to the page where this core tool, which is called the Reality Management Worksheet or Wake Up Sheet, the name keeps changing, but the process, the core process is always the same. And it's free as a download. You don't even have to get on a mailing list. The vast majority and the core power tools that Michael and Jeannie have created, they're making available completely free of charge without any strings attached. You click the link, you download the PDF file, you print it out as often as you want, and you've got access to one of the most powerful tools I have seen and experienced in my over 41 years of living life and doing therapy. Also on that link, you'll find a link to, again, completely free. You don't even have to add yourself to a mailing list. The 24.5-minute video of a PowerPoint presentation that explains the core of the process. The core of the process, which took Dr. Michael Rice 35 years to try and to really understand, even though he taught it and he saw it work and he saw people have great results with it, it took him about 35 years to really begin to understand the core. And the core mechanism of this process is to understand that the reality that I'm experiencing in each moment is generated by my mind. It's got nothing to do with what's going on outside of me. And it's generated in my mind, driven by the goals I hold in each moment. And when I hold a goal, it literally recruits data from my past experiences and my energetic patterns, and it uses my past and the information stored in my brain and body's energy system to create a picture in my mind that I then hallucinate and believe is what's going on outside of me. And so if I understand the alarm system and I realize when I'm feeling any kind of discomfort physically, mentally, or emotionally, that means I have done something off the mark. I've shifted my focus away from my true energy as a nature of love. Then, now with the concept of identifying a goal is what drives that creation in my mind that I'm calling reality that's driven by my perception, I can then go in and cancel whatever goal I'm holding, and I can get access to a higher faculty of experience, of wisdom, of energetic connectedness by simply asking to be shown how I'm actually creating my own pain. And when I cancel the goal, it literally collapses the picture in my mind that I have identified with, that I've been holding on to, that I have been certain is what tells me that I'm right and the world is wrong and that I shouldn't have to be feeling this. I can cancel that whole perceptual process by simply canceling my goals in the moment and asking to be shown from something far greater and more powerful and expansive than my conscious logical mind, where's the true source of my discomfort? And when that happens, and I ask to be shown, and I ask to love truth, truth meaning the actuality of what's happening in the moment, powerful changes happen in my life. That's the core of this work. A beautiful PowerPoint presentation outlining it is available for free. The worksheet process itself is available for free. And a whole host of other worksheets and tools that are available for free at www.whyagain.org. So I'll take a breath and I'll ask Michelle if we have anybody in the chat room, if we have anybody with their hand up on the phone queue, or if you have any thoughts about what I've said so far.
It's kind of quiet on the switchboard today in the chat room. The one thing I really have to agree with everything that you said is the part about that it gets easier and easier. It's surprising to me how my own resistance systematically sorry, I'm getting a call. I'm trying to figure out. Excuse me. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought because I was getting a call, and so I was talking about the process of forgiveness and letting go.
You were saying
it
gets easier and easier.
Easier. And that it's been kind of a delightful surprise, because the level of resistance maybe at the beginning when you're coming into the particular issues is very palpable for me, and a real force to reckon with, so to speak. And so then, you know, a couple years later, and then it's with a lot more ease, and I didn't expect that because of how hard, difficult, how challenging it was for me to let go, let's say, at the beginning, concepts about needing to be right, you know, voracious appetite for needing to be right, and like how that was so integrated and identified so strongly. And I mean, I don't recognize that I'm not that person anymore. Not that it's completely real. There are fringes. It's just that my ability to transcend them is becoming easier. And it's like a nice surprise, like bonus. I don't have to always be so arduous.
Yeah, it really, I have noticed the same thing for myself, that year after year, the ease has been sneaking up on me. And at the same time, there's a course, a lesson in the Way of Mastery. In the fifth lesson, it talks about the keys to the kingdom, and it says, the keys to the kingdom are desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility. And the reason for the need for humility is because the further one goes in the process of removing what's less than love, the more powerfully the person's life changes for the better, and the greater the temptation for the individual to say, oh, look what I did, look what a fine boy am I. And that is the other side of the coin for how it gets easier and easier to face my own resistance and to surrender into the process and pick up the tools and move through my own painful energies or false beliefs. I can move through them far more quickly than I did 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I can also be pulled up very, very abruptly and short, because the things I'm likely to run into at the next level are things that I have hidden from myself so successfully and with such an intense conviction that this is too powerful, too negative, too upsetting, too grief-stricken, too rageful for me to deal with. So I will get far more intense negative responses when I hit a new layer, perhaps even more intense than when I first began or in my first few years in this work. What I have noticed, however, is that the duration of the discomfort is getting shorter and shorter. So if I keep my willingness focused and I'm willing to go through the more intense, the more uncomfortable, the more painful, the more confusing layers, they pass more quickly.
You know, that's interesting disclosure, Tim, because I haven't really heard anybody mention that concept before, and trying to put it through my own experience to see if that feels right. But it's interesting. What would you think the correlation is why the intensity be more? Because you're cleared the thinner layers, and so you're getting to the...
Well, my understanding of it is that it's all directly related to my willingness to go through it. And the things that will pop up when I first say, hey, I want to be enlightened. I want to be a better person. I want to go follow some spiritual teachings. I want to sign up for this wisdom school. So the things that I'm going to be willing to see at that first level are still tied to my ego's identification with wanting to be seen as a good person or as a spiritual seeker. And so I'm really, at that level, not as willing as my conscious mind wants me to believe. It's still mostly tied to an ego identification. And so I'll be able to look at, oh, yeah, I was kind of mean to my brother when I was growing up. I should go through those layers. Oh, yeah, you know, sometimes I'm not completely honest about, you know, my financial dealings or whatever it is that was my issue. And because I'm new to it, I think I'm willing at a far deeper level than my willingness actually goes, because I don't understand the process. And the further I go into the process, the more I peel back the layers and the more I realize, oh my gosh, you know, I have hidden a lot more stuff from myself than I ever imagined I had hidden from myself. I have literally convinced myself that I can't survive looking at this piece of knowledge about myself or this false belief about myself or this old memory about myself. Well, I didn't even realize that. So as I go deeper, I'm going to run into things that have been there longer and that got put in there with a stronger conclusion on my part that I could not survive if they came to the surface. So that's my understanding of why when I do have a new layer come up, sometimes it's just mind-boggling to my conscious mind how intense it is when I've had thoughts about, oh, yeah, I've handled my anger issue in that area, or, oh, yeah, I've handled my guilt issue in that area. And then if I let myself go down that path of thinking I've done this work or I've finished with that issue, I've literally just put a set of blinders on myself. And then I just go charging off into the world with blinders off, and I get shocked by the fact that I just ran into a tree stump. So my challenge is to stay constantly with the resolution in each new moment to be open to watch whatever errors, whatever alarm systems go off, and just stay with the program that says, okay, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. And that's, you know, one of my favorite lines from one of the early worksheets was just that, quote, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. My thinking is off the mark. Another one of my favorite lines from a previous worksheet is, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. And if you think about it, that means I'm a very powerful creator, because in each moment, I create my experience of life by the thoughts I choose. Because the statement was, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. If I can stay focused on that in the moment, and just be alerted to the fact that any discomfort, physical, mental, or emotional, is my alarm system provided by the Creator for my benefit to let me know when I'm in error, then I don't have the trap of thinking, oh, I'm done with that. Oh, I've already cleared these issues, so it must be his problem right now. Does that make sense?
No, it all makes real sense. I actually want to go back to the laundry list that you provided, and I didn't catch who you said it was. Humility was the end of it. There were
The five keys to the kingdom from the Way of Mastery, lesson 5. And the first is desire. And in lesson four in Way of Mastery, the entire lesson is about the energy of desire. And I'll wrap it up this way. You know, we have a lot of confusion that we create and perpetuate by the use of language and words. And there's a lot of individual meaning that each of us has loaded for a word like desire. So in the fourth lesson, Way of Mastery goes into great detail trying to describe the energy of desire. And one little story is that, so here's the Creator, and the Creator creates these beautiful little flowers and provides the energy of creation like the nectar of life that these flowers can suck up from their roots and use to create buds and flowers and beautiful arrangements of creation. And the Creator gave those flowers free will. And the Creator steps back and watches and says, isn't this odd? Some of these flowers I've created, just as this nectar of life and energy comes into their roots and starts to ascend, they tie their stem in knots. So that energy can't express. So the energy of desire is simply the energy of creation that wants to express through each of us individually and differently. This is completely different than the energy of wanting or craving or obsession. It's a very powerful but very subtle energy that most of us have been conditioned out of paying attention to. So the entire lesson four is some exercises and some talk about how to just slow down and sit back and observe the energy of desire trying to express through us, and know we don't have to act on it, and get better and better at tuning our awareness to this very subtle and powerful energy, and that's desire. Lesson five talks about the five keys to the kingdom. Desire is the first, intention is the second, allowance, surrender, and humility. So desire we've talked about. I get tuned into what uniquely wants to express through me as this energy of creation. And I practice letting go of the judgments. Oh, I shouldn't want money because I'm a spiritual person. Oh, I shouldn't want to eat ice cream because I'm supposed to be a healthy spiritual person. Oh, I shouldn't want sex because spiritual people don't really care about the physical. And just put all of those judgments away and tune into, make a practice of tuning into this energy that's trying to flow through us. With the understanding that we have the spiritual faculty of choice and that we can choose from a place of balance in alignment with other values and priorities what we act on. And so this helps us move into a very productive alignment. The second, so there's desire, then there's intention, and intention has to do with reminding myself in the present moment that my intention is to be of service to this energy of creation, that my intention is to be aligned with the desire of the Creator trying to express through me. The next faculty is allowance. And this has to do with recognizing that whatever is happening for me, not to me. And that when I have a resistance to something that appears in my life, if I go with the resistance as anything other than my alarm system to refocus on my true nature as love, if I use the resistance from an ego perspective to decide I'm right and you're wrong, I'm removing myself from the stream of life in the moment and the flow of creation. So allowance has me being the leaf on the surface of the water being swept downstream in the flow of the creative energy. I get up in the morning and I have some plans to have a beautiful day out in the sun and a picnic and all kinds of friends invited, and it's raining. And rather than having even a moment's resistance, I allow, and I look at the rain, I allow this day to be rainy. I allow this day to progress in an entirely different fashion than what I had planned. So there's desire, tapping into the energy that wants to express, the creative energy that wants to express uniquely through me, intention in the moment, in the presence moment, reminding myself that I want to be aligned with the intention of all creation in harmony, in extension of love and beauty. And then I want to be in allowance. I want to be in that state of allowing however the day unfolds and use it, allow myself to be used in each of those moments to express that creative energy flow with the intention of being in the flow of creation and allowing whatever happens and releasing my resistance in each moment. And then I want to surrender. I want to surrender to all of it that can come, all of life that can benefit from my extension of love in each moment, all that I can learn by surrendering to be taught by the power of the moment, by the other creative beings around me, by the flow of creative energy in my world that I have drawn to me to reveal to me that which is less than love within me so that I can dismantle it and release it, surrendering in each moment. And a lot of times Dr. Michael Rice talks about this too. He says, you know, people don't want to hear about surrender. We're raised in a culture that's focused on domination and competition and being the best and overpowering things. And people really get all bent out of shape when they hear the word surrender and understand it at these deeper and deeper levels, that it's really a powerful, powerful process. And what most people don't understand is that they are always surrendering to one thing or another. In the world of competition and dominance, I'm always either surrendering to anger or fear, or I'm surrendering to love. And in this work, the invitation is to learn to surrender to the flow of life, which comes from that energy of creation, which some would call love, to be focused on how it wants to express through me as an energy of desire, to hold the intention to stay aligned with the true energy of creative force, which always speaks about inclusion and acceptance and joy, extension and creativity in a loving energy, to allow that to happen and unfold as it does, to surrender to the process fully, to surrender to love in each moment, choose to surrender to love rather than surrender to be driven by the alarm system, which is there only to tell me, hey, you know, you're not in alignment with love in this moment. And then as one does that, one discovers fabulous transformations in their experience of life moment to moment, because one begins to build the habit of staying focused with their conscious awareness on their true nature as the energy of love, and then their experience of life in each moment becomes the extension of that love. It becomes loving, joyful, passionate, compassionate, inclusive, creative. And in that moment, I have transformed my experience of life. And as I do that, things get so much better that it literally puts me in a different world of experience. And that's where humility needs to be, again, a presence moment commitment, a new moment resolution to stay connected to the fact that, you know what? I didn't create myself. I don't even know when I was created. I don't know how to digest the food I had for breakfast. So this isn't me doing all of this. This is me letting the energy of desire flow through me, holding the intention of being aligned with the desire from a higher level of being and that level of energy that keeps the stars in alignment and the planets spinning, allowing whatever happens and allowing myself to understand that it must be happening for me and not punitively to me, surrendering in that moment to the energy of creation rather than resistance, and then understanding I didn't do this. Even the master teacher that some call Jesus, and we know from the ancient Aramaic his name was something more like Yeshua or Yeshua, that his core teachings were, I myself do nothing, and yet the Father within me does all these things. Even at the pinnacle of manifesting creatively, positively, true masters understand that their being a master has nothing to do with control of anything other than they've mastered their ability to be a perpetually avid student. And in this context, what am I being a student of? I am a student of the energy of creation, the energy of love, and I allow it to teach me, and I surrender to it in each moment. And I hold the power of humility, which is that ability to identify with the highest and best with everyone and everything around me, and then choosing to cooperate only with that. Taking a breath. Did I stay on target or go way off on tangent?
I think you're doing a wonderful job, so much so that people prefer to listen than calling with questions. It's a great message, and just for me it resonates just a lot of positive, good feelings when I can remember to reconnect with that when you're saying it and kind of imagining it and, you know, instantly feel a higher level of vitality, more energy, just sitting here. So I'm sure other people are similarly inspired. It's an inspiring message.
Well, I bring in things like Way of Mastery and Guy Finley to this work on this show because to my ear and my eye, it's the same message. And when I have an experience in my mind-body-energy system that's anything other than that energy of love, I want to pick up a reality management worksheet. I want to take a breath. I want to do like the Beatitudes say in the first few Beatitudes. You know, these aren't religious prescriptions for following some law of man or some religious ritual. This is what some would call a yogic practice. So instead of blessed are the poor in spirit, which is the first beatitude, something like that from the King James, the ancient Aramaic scholars have gone back to the original and found out that what was interpreted as the word poor is not poor as in having nothing, but as in being open. And another meaning for that word that was translated by the Greeks as the word poor is it's just one tiny little mark, one little dash on the paper turns the word that the Greeks interpreted as poor to the word home. And so if you're listening to someone who's supposed to be an earth-shattering spiritual teacher, and then someone down the road says, oh, did you hear what that spiritual teacher said? Blessed are those who are poor in their spirit. And somebody else says, wait a minute, I was there at the same talk. I know his native language, and I believe what he said was, now is the ripe time, ripe as in the ripeness of a fruit, at the perfect moment. Right now is the perfect moment to make your home in the breathing unity, to breathe, to bring yourself into the breath, have your home in your spirit world, and your home in your connection, the intimate connection between the physical and the spiritual energy system. Now is the ripe time to make your home in the breathing unity and let the fertile soil of the queendom birth your clear guidance. And somebody else was at the same talk and they said, no, not only do I speak his native language, I'm from his hometown. And I really think all he said was, listen, whenever you feel anything that you don't like, breathe, make your home in the breath, feel it fully, keep breathing, and then let it flow through you. That's all he said in the first three Beatitudes. Breathe, feel it, and let it go. It makes more sense to me that a spiritual teacher would say, make your home in your spirit. Make your home in the breath, which connects the energy of creation to this physical body. This energy flow, without which there is no animation of that thing you're calling a physical energy system. Focus on that. Let that reconnect you to what your true nature is. Let that remind you that you don't have any idea how your breath keeps moving when you're not thinking about it or when you're asleep at night and your heart keeps pumping and your food digests. You don't have any idea how you make the body move across the room when you decide to get up and go to the refrigerator. There is something in each of us that is living through us. There is something in each of us which is looking out through us. There is something within each of us that is breathing us, living us, breathing us. And Dale Allen Hoffman likes to quote St. Francis of Assisi who said, what you are looking for when you go on a spiritual quest, when you say you want to find God, what you are looking for is what's doing the looking through you. It is the energy of creation that's trying to express through you in each moment that keeps your heart pumping, that keeps your food digesting, that motivates your nerve system and your muscles to help you navigate your body through the physical realm. And that reminds me of this one quote that Michael Rice likes to bring up. He says, you know, there's a biblical quote that says, the eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall your darkness become? And he says, you know, if you look at that in the English language as it came through the Greek translations from an ancient Aramaic speaker, it's really boggling. What is that talking about? The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall your darkness become? But if you have the ancient Aramaic translations and an understanding of the idioms, Michael Rice says, here's a better way to understand what was being said there. Your perceptual mind is your light for this earthly life. It's the thing that's supposed to help you walk through life without bumping into trees or open manholes. Your perception is simply meant to help you navigate through the physical realm. And within that light of perception, you know, there's a site on a CIA website that says their research indicates very, very clearly that our perception does not record reality. We've been taught to believe that if I open my eyes and look out the window, I'm simply going to see what's there. But numerous studies have demonstrated, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that my perception does not record reality. My perception constructs reality, and it's constructed based on goals and conclusions that I hold in my mind and based on my past experiences which feed those goals and conclusions. So here's some kind of a translated quote that comes down and says, The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? Well, here's ancient Aramaic wisdom. If you go back to the original translation, and it says something more like, your perceptual mind is the light for your earthly life. It's here to help you navigate through the physical realm safely. And if your light in that perceptual realm is darkness, in the ancient Aramaic, that meant any form of hostility or fear. If you're feeling hostility or fear, you're not perceiving accurately. Your lights are out. It's as bad as wearing blinders. You're going to create more problems for yourself. You're going to think your internal discomfort, your alarm system telling you you're off the mark, is caused by someone or something outside of you. Then you're going to go chasing after someone or something outside of you to get them, he, she, to change so that you don't have to feel your alarm system going off. And that's an endless wild goose chase. There will never, ever be any satisfaction achieved in the world by me getting someone else to change so that I don't have to feel my alarm system going off. So your perceptual mind is the light for your earthly life. And if you're feeling hostility or fear, your lights are out, you're going to have a distorted perception. This is your alarm system telling you, Tim, you've recruited from your past painful memories, false beliefs, traumatic energies, and you're constructing a reality, an internal picture in your mind about the world and the people around you that is not accurate. Tim, stop. You're about to step into an open manhole. Tim, if you're driving a car, pull over, take a few deep breaths, make your home in the breathing unity. Breathe, feel it, and let it go. Restore your conscious focus of awareness to your true nature as the energy of love. The lights will come back on. You will see your life more accurately, and then in that moment you can extend. You can choose to extend your true nature as the energy of love and creation to everyone and everything around you. And it's guaranteed, Tim, this is coming from your creator. It's guaranteed to work out better for you than when you act from hostility or fear. This brings to mind, Guy Finley says, you know, the creator didn't just put you in a world with a teacher. The Creator put you in a world where your constant relationship to the laws, to the energies that can teach you about yourself, your true nature, and love in each moment will never abandon you if you simply ask to be taught. You're not just in the world with a teacher. You're in life, in each present moment, with an infinite relationship with that which can teach you about yourself and the true nature of the world around you if you simply ask it to. And if I can become conscious and present in each moment to my internal alarm system, more and more each day, I'm still working at peeling off the layers of decades of conditioning in my own current lifetime. But if I can practice this present moment resolution, this new moment's resolution, to be aware of the alarm system sounding within me, tension, fear, confusion, shame, guilt, upset, grief, pain, rage, frustration, and use that to take a breath, to center, to release what's less than loving in me, to focus my conscious awareness on my true nature as love, the lights come back on, I get a more accurate picture of what actually is happening in the world around me, and these other beings of light and love that are with me, to quote something I wrote earlier in a blog post last week or the week before, there are no idiots in this world. There are only beings of light and brilliance who have either temporarily forgotten or have yet to discover their brilliance. Yes, every one of us has done something that we've later gone back and looked at and said, well, that was idiotic. And yet that does not define us. That is not our true nature. So there are no idiots. There are only beings of light and brilliance who have either temporarily forgotten or have yet to discover their brilliance. And if I feel something in my alarm system going off, any negative thought or emotion or physical ache or pain, and I stop, I breathe, I make my home, my conscious awareness focus on my true nature as energy of love, the lights come back on. And when the lights come back on, I am allowed in that moment accurate perception about the true nature of the beings of light and brilliance all around me and how everything that's happening in my life is happening for me to help me reveal to myself what I've been hiding from myself that's less than love, what I have been identified with that is less than the energy of creation, so that I might release that and choose again in each new moment to keep my focus on extending my true nature as the energy of love. I trust, Michelle, that if a hand had gone up, you would have interrupted, and so I will ask briefly here in the last few minutes for questions or comments from you.
I would have told you if there was a hand up. I think people are really enjoying it, and actually I have a way of mastery somewhere. I'm going to go find it and read that lesson. It's intriguing. So thank you for your comments and introducing other, you know, Bessonly and way of mastery. I think you're right. They're different paths to the same summit.
Yeah, we've talked at length at different times about how the truth is just the truth. And what's actually true is true no matter which words you're using to describe it. We have times when people get, and I mentioned it last week, we had a support group again last night and one a week ago. And a week ago the discussion was all about a word and a definition for a word and how everybody was having slightly different meanings for the word. And so it ended up with people debating, well, what does that really mean, and what does this really mean? So if you get past that, if you look at the actual experience of life, it works the same way for all of us. And so each of the wisdom schools has something to offer, and each of us from our history are going to be able to understand or resonate better with one school than another. And so pursue what soothes you, what nurtures you, what helps you tune into your true nature. And in the meantime, come on back tomorrow and the rest of the week and have the best year yet of your eternal life. We appreciate everybody who's been here today.
So that was a pre-recorded show from 2015 with Dr. Tim and Michelle Pichette. And so now we're going to welcome you to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Friday, October the 7th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And let me see if Michael is getting dialed in. And we do already have a hand up, so he'll be with us here in just 1 second. And I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here button or click on the bullseye in the middle of the page. They'll both take you to the same place. And we actually we've come across a couple of videos that one of them, well, they both were recorded in 2017, but it was just within days of my mom passing away. And then I guess on our leaving Michigan and getting back to Virginia, and with her passing and all the things that were going on at that time, it just went by us, and we didn't do anything with them. So one recording is only 6 minutes, and it is when they started Journey's Dream, and so he was given an introduction of the forgiveness work and how that ties in, you know, to be able to get back to who you really are, to get back to love. And so we now got that on the website. I actually have it under the section of media and to watch for free. We've got that out there. And I also put it down under news because this is, October is Mental Health Month. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that it just showed back up at that time. And that is out there to listen to. And then we found a new two-hour DVD that we had never produced. I mean, it's recorded as an MP3, but we had never produced it into a actual disc or anything like that. So it's going to be available here within a day out on our streaming. If you go to the website and you click on MP4s to stream, then it will be out there. And it is A Course in Miracles, and it's The Name of God is My Inheritance. So we came across a couple of jewels today.
And, a fun lesson.
Go ahead. Yeah. And, Michael, I'll let you announce about the donation match that we have going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. We let's see. Let me see. I know that we had one person come in with $50 today, and last night someone did $125. So we're almost up to what Julie said she would match. Which is awesome. Thank you. We just sent
Julie
off.
Had said she would match up to $1,000, and 1,000, the deadline
right,
that she put
right.
on it, yeah, is the 15th, which is next Saturday. So you've got one more
right.
week, and so if you make a donation, you've doubled your money. And
yeah.
I think we already had about 600 before those two last donations came in, didn't we? Or 650?
Actually,
or?
I just looked at 670. So there's another 175, which is awesome. Thank you, everybody, for that support. We just sent a $3,500 check off for taxes in Missouri and about $400 a month for the electric bill, and, you know, on and on it goes. Thank you, Michael, for being out there and cleaning the property up, and thank you, Magda, for sending someone to Magda actually picked up the tab for someone to come and do some lawn cutting and trimming and cleaning up. So appreciation for the support, and it sure would be nice to get things back rocking before too much longer. And, you know, every time we turn around, somebody we know has COVID again. And so as long as that's open and intimate setting like Heartland, probably wouldn't be the place to be doing intensive. So we'll see what unfolds. But other than that, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room, sweetie?
We do have a hand up, and I believe it's Michael from Heartland. 770, you're on the air.
Hello, my friends. How are you today?
Well, speak of angels and angels appear. Thank you for jumping in and wasn't expecting that, doing that donation. It's appreciated.
Oh, welcome, and you all are most deserving. Wish it could be many, many, many times multiplied over. But that will come. That will come.
Well, it's multiplied by two with the fact that Julie jumped in and said she was going to match donations. So that's cool.
Very, very
sweet.
So
what's on your mind today? What's exciting in your world? Actually, she did it, what's that, a year and a half ago or so? She did it back then, too. It's the second time she's done it, so. Pretty
yeah.
sweet. And
that is
the fact
nice.
That, the fact that we stopped traveling and that pretty much crashed cash flow. It's, and when Heartland closed with the pandemic stuff going on, it's like, but we're rocking. We're rolling.
That is wonderful, and we're happy for that.
So am I. So what's on your mind for today, sir?
I've got a couple of things I'd like to ask your thoughts on. One
okay.
being emotional intelligence. I look at news as often as I can, and not the CNN type, but other pertinent news to what I think is good to for me to look at. And in the business sector, you always see one always sees a good share of information about emotional intelligence as it comes to business leaders and even in family life. So I was thinking, as I've been digging deeper into the first century Aramaic forgiveness work, about how that relates to emotional intelligence. And I know that I'm thinking that the more one does this work, the higher emotional intelligence that they will achieve. That's my take at this point. Wondering your thoughts and what you might like to add to that, or is that entirely off base?
I guess it depends. Maybe share with us your definition of emotional intelligence.
Well, that is a very good question. I'm not sure of the exact answer, but to me, it is understanding more of where a person's coming from than actually what might be coming out of their mouth or actions, and having the fortitude within to know how to deal with that and how to respond other than react.
Well, reactions, of course, you just break the word down, react. How did you redo an act you did on a previous occasion? And as long as we're stuck in carbon-based memory, that's all that's possible is, you know, we call the carbon-based memory mind, the replicate mind. All it can do is replicate whatever's gone on in the past. And what happens is if we are, you know, especially like, let's say, for instance, we talked about power person dynamics. If we're, let's say, if we have embedded a power person dynamic, and remember three things happen in order for a power person dynamic to embed. One, there's a person who has more power over the object of the situation, usually a child and usually a parent, though not always. So the parent would have more power over the child than the child does. Two, the parent is not functioning as a human being, is not functioning as love. And three, the child perceives it as survival. When that occurs, the child, you know, out of the level of awareness that it has, makes things up, makes up what this means, oftentimes taking on thought disorders. And when that coup de grace happens, that the child perceives this as survival, you know, like, I didn't get my ice cream. Yeah, survival. And the energy that's going on, why didn't I get the ice cream? Well, you know, the next door neighbor just died. I didn't know anything about it. And dad came in tears and, you know, seems to be in shambles, isn't going anywhere. In fact, he isn't even talking to me. Uh-oh, the child goes, there must be something wrong with me, and takes in all of dad's sadness and grief energetically, in that when those three things occur, the energy field of the object of the situation, in this case the child, just opens and becomes like a sponge and sucks in every energy that's in the environment without any kind of rational thinking about it or any processing of it, just taking on the raw energy. So once that occurs, until someone becomes aware of that process and moves through that dynamic, every time something in the environment triggers that construct in the mind of the three-year-old who thought it was all about them, that they didn't get the ice cream, they had no idea, a neighbor died and dad was sad and, you know, was processing someone's death, made it up about them being, you know, not worthwhile and, you know, they don't get taken care of. And 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, 90 years later, as long as that reality, as long as that perceptual construct is in the mind, whenever something comes along and triggers it into activity, the mind substitutes that construct for what's happening in the world, and people believe it. They accept it. Oh, well, you know, I had no value to dad, and I didn't get my ice cream, therefore I'm no good, and I never get taken care of. And for the rest of that person's life, until they can bring that particular dynamic forward in the presence of active love and heal it, whenever something triggers it into activity, the mind is going to serve that. You know, you remember Paul saying, we see as though through a glass darkly. Mm-hmm. So this darkened mind with this perception of the three-year-old that wasn't based on anything true, so you'd say there wasn't much emotional intelligence for the child, just knows that now, 50 years later, something happened that this construct replays in the mind, and it puts that replay in the place of what's actually going on in the world. And a person without emotional intelligence believes their mind every time that comes up in them. And so if we're using that as our definition of emotional intelligence, the ability to comprehend and mentally and emotionally understand what's going on, when that sort of thing comes up, a person with emotional intelligence is able to go, wait a minute, yes, that person did just brush me aside in a rush, and I can see that they were in a hurry to get something done. And it doesn't mean that I'm broken and I have no value and there's no room for me and, you know, woe is me. They're not replaying that, but are able to bring awareness and intelligence to it. And the intervening step there, when a perception, a power person dynamic like that is triggered into activity, is to apply any and all of the tools we teach, of which there are dozens, to dissolve the pain-based reality that covers up the actuality of the experience, the possibility of the experience, to be able to process through that so we can show up with more emotional intelligence. That would be my understanding of the concept. And the more work one does, yeah, the more they're going to be able to sort out, oh, this is a construct in my mind. This is an actuality in the world. And I'm going to give up replacing the actuality of what happens with structures in my mind that keep me replicating the past.
Beautiful. Thank you.
One of the things we'll see is that a person where, you know, so we got somebody that's 30 years of age and a power person dynamic is elicited in them from something in the environment, that person will literally use the words that the power person spoke. Remember, they were in this sponge state. They'll literally use the words that the power person spoke 30 years ago. I mean, verbatim, use the word patterns and thoughts of the power person to reinforce the construct their mind is showing them and have no awareness that they're doing that. Emotional intelligence says, I remember Shakespeare said, my words fly up, my thoughts remain below. Now, I remember one of the favorite phrases of my power person was, yeah, you're no good. So here I am 30 years later. My mind serves up that construct, and I'm looking at my brother, and I say, yeah, and you're no good. Write down the exact word patterns get played out. And this goes on generation upon generation upon generation. And you look at the ancient scriptures and they said, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. That's a person without emotional intelligence. And oftentimes that dynamic is passed from generation to generation to generation. You know, the parent who was brought up in poverty and destitute and experiencing themselves as being uncared for, passes on a structure in the mind, child, right out of the gates. Like, well, you know, I'm not valuable. I'm not cared for. And when the mind serves that structure up, actually believes it rather than going, oh, I'm feeling something based in hostility or fear here. This is what emotional intelligence says. I'm experiencing something based in hostility and fear. Therefore, my mind is using corrupt data to build this construct I'm experiencing. I'm going to go inside myself, apply forgiveness to remove the corrupt data and the patterns of my generations of being in poverty and not being valuable, and I'm going to do something more in line with the truth. Oh, I'm made of God stuff. I am made of the active presence of love. Of course I have value. Of course I can heal this. To me, that would be what emotional intelligence does. And yes, that's what this work is totally based in.
How beautiful. How beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Michael. And it brings another question to mind as I was listening to you explain that about the child in ice cream. For instance, in my studies from past, I have read where there can be twins. So let's say I've seen the studies back from childhood to adult twins and how they react to different situations could be totally opposite. So say we have the 5-6-year-old twins who did not get their ice cream, and from my understanding, one of the twins could brush that off and it wouldn't phase them in the least. They're just marching on. And the other, it could be a traumatic event.
Yes.
Can you share with us anything about how that comes about with
absolutely
twins, and what's the differentiation between the reactions? Or
well, remember that each mind builds its constructs out of its content. So let's just imagine a scenario as to why two kids at 6 would be so different. You know, one, you know, there was the drunk and abusive father, and one of the children of 6 grows up to be the town drunk and failure, and one grows up to be the mayor of the town and the most successful businessman in town. And each one of them says, well, after all, with a father like I had, how else could it be? Well, wait a minute, where did that start? How do you put that together? Let's imagine that mom finds out she's pregnant. Mom and dad want this baby so much. And they go and they get their, you know, prenatal checks. And, you know, their house is small, but they've got that room that is so perfectly decorated for the baby. And they're just, and one of the things they've shown is that in hypnosis, you can take an adult, been around for 60 years, put them in a somnambulistic state of hypnosis, and they can go back and tell you who was in the room when they were born, what their emotional state is. They can even tell you what mother's hairdo was 60 years ago, the day they were born. So let's imagine that into the hospital they go for this birth. The doctor's so excited with them. He's been with them through this whole pregnancy, and they're so wanting this baby. And as the birth is coming, you know, the child's entering the world, and everybody's so excited, and dad just gushes with joy as the doctor hands him the baby, and then he takes the baby over and puts on mom's breast, and mom is just ecstatic. But there's trouble brewing. The doctor, checking mom with his stethoscope, discovers another heartbeat. And now he's in terror that he's going to lose his practice because of the insurance rates for OBGYNs is outrageous. So terror just entered the room. Doctor, in fear and trepidation, knowing this family's not wealthy, but they're welcoming this wonderful child into their small home, gingerly tells mom and dad, there's a second baby, you're having twins. And dad goes into, oh, my God, I don't make enough money to support two babies. We've only got one little room for the nursery. Oh, God, dear, what are we going to do? And mom's like, you know, I'd heard it's difficult to start breastfeeding, how painful it can be, but I was ready to do it. Now I'm going to have to do it twice, and where are we going to put that other baby? And, you know, I mean, there's nothing personal with that second baby coming in. Can perceive itself as the cause of terror and rejection on the part of both mom and dad and not being wanted. The first hour, you know, going through the birth process, chemically, when it comes to chemical learning, when it comes to registering energies in the system, in the first hour after birth, a child will learn more about life than it'll learn in any hour of the rest of its life. One child learned he's coming into a wonderful place where he's welcome and this is going to be an awesome ride. The second child comes into a room where, man, I create trauma wherever I go and I'm not wanted. Watch those two kids play out through their whole life. One becomes the town drunk and the failure, and one becomes the mayor and the top businessman in town.
Amazing.
Every event in each of those lives is going to be perceived differently based on the, what should I say, the strength of the emotional energy involved in just their first experience of coming into the world, the first hour of their lives. Everything's going to be filtered through a glass. And one of those glasses is not going to leave a very nice shine on anything that happens in life. And the other one's going to be pretty chipper and pretty up and ready to go for it.
I just learned something. I imagine that is enormous about the first hour of baby's life. Never knew
that
before.
It is absolutely enormous.
So that has huge implications if one is born cesarean, if one is born vaginally, or if one is in the hospital versus home, and when the cord is cut, and all those things combined, it's just a huge
the medical
effect.
Yeah, the medical thing of, you know, the minute the baby's born, cut the cord. Can create, I mean, that first breath, you know, having to draw it in because the body's lacking oxygen compared to the cord was kept attached and the body's supplied with oxygen, and the child can gently take its first breath. Yeah, that's major.
Wow. The first hour.
And, you know, one of the things that they're discovering is that a baby born via C-section, you know, one of the things about coming into the world, there are probiotics that support life that only exist in the vagina of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the child is meant to be fully, you know, we live in a culture of, ooh, sex is dirty, save it for the one you love. So this becomes some sort of weird conversation. But the truth is the child, the newborn, is designed to be totally bathed, eyes, nose, mouth, ears, anus, vagina, penis. Everything is designed to be coated by those probiotics, and it's the beginning of immunity for that child's whole life.
You're very, very critical.
And the challenge of going through the birth canal, the pressure, the experience of that is designed to prepare the child for learning. One of the things that there's an interesting video out there on YouTube, it's called Microbirth, and they talk about that whole thing and what they're now doing when they in advanced hospitals is they are soaking sponges if they know they're going to have to do a C-section because of some kind of medical emergency, and there's certainly valid cases for that. Mind you, if you go to Brazil, I understand that in Brazil there's like a huge number of births, 60, 70, 80%, I don't remember the exact number, that are done weeks in advance by a C-section so that the woman's body doesn't become distorted, because then she's not the sexual object she could otherwise be. But the child doesn't go through that preparation for learning that they're designed for, and the immunity, factors of immunity are missing from that. So they're in really, truly aware, awake hospitals where hospital births or, you know, OBGYN who are aware, they soak all of the fluids from the woman's vagina where there's a C-section, and then they bathe the child, yes, in the eyes, in the nose, in the mouth, in the ears, everywhere, so that they're inoculated with probiotics that only exist in a woman's vagina for that purpose. Unless the child comes out and that's nurtured, if they're, you know, if they're given their first antibiotic at 2 weeks, you know, that's knocked out. And so it, I should correct myself, only exists in abundance there. And yeah, there are so many factors that go into it. Conscious birth is a big, big factor in how somebody's whole life is lived.
That is just so remarkable when we really consider all those different factors. And, you know, since the early 1900s, birth is, for the last 100 years, very different than it was for millennia before.
Yep. It's become a medical procedure. It's interesting, in the state of Florida, you know, there was a large colored population and doctors, you know, there was no money in delivering babies community. So doctors encouraged midwives. And then not so long ago, insurance came in and many people had insurance. So doctors began to fight and try to destroy the midwifery movement in Florida because they wanted that money. It didn't matter what community it came from. The insurance companies were paying it. There are a lot of factors for us to get conscious of, and a lot of arenas in which forgiveness is necessary in order for us to wake up and function as we are truly designed to function, and to trust the process that we go through naturally. You know, the system of medicine I'm trained in is naturopathy, and its focus is what is natural to the structure. And there's a big money business that comes from another direction. I know back in Atlanta, I had a practice in Atlanta as a naturopath, and we had a naturopathic society there. And the man who was the president of our society was a former bureaucrat in the state government. And one day he got a call from somebody that he had worked with in the state government and said, hey, you better start looking at what's going on with the rewrite of some of the legislation in the state of Georgia. This goes back in the 70s. And the definition of naturopathy in Georgia at that point was that the practice of naturopathy shall be legal, blah, 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 and shall exclude the use of X-ray surgery and drugs. That was part of the definition of our profession in Georgia. The state had ordered a rewrite of many of the laws with one purpose and one purpose only, not to change anything, but to simplify it and make it more understandable. Well, when the fellow was the president of the society, got a call from this former friend who was still in the state bureaucracy, said, you better take a look at what they're doing to your profession. And guess what? Just, you know, it was a simple rewrite. That's all it was, meant to reflect exactly the same. But the word legal, the state of the practice of naturopathy shall be legal, was changed to illegal. And then if that didn't work, and it shall include, or pardon me, exclude the use of X-ray and surgery and avoid the use of drugs. So all of a sudden now, drugs were not excluded from the practice of naturopathy. If he hadn't caught that, if that hadn't been corrected, that's how the definition would go today. Now, you know, I don't know if you know anything about osteopathy, but the osteopathic profession is about moving fluids in the body and energy in the body. It's about manipulation. Yeah. And basically, there was when the pharmaceutical industry, the industry, the root of the word pharmacy being sorcery, when the sorcery industry started to acquire a lot of money and power, they actually hired a guy to go around and inspect so-called medical facilities. This guy was a minister, knew nothing about medicine, but he wrote a thing, you can check it out, called the Flexner Report.
Oh, yes.
And in that, he basically destroyed anything to do with natural medicine, and all of a sudden Mr. Rockefeller, who had hired him using this report, virtually eradicated every school of actual healing in the country and replaced them with drug schools. The osteopathic profession survived, and there was a point where the pharmaceutical folks came in to the osteopaths, and you know, an osteopath who gets an appointment with somebody, maybe, you know, back then we're talking, you know, I'm not even sure the time frame, 50s, 60s, where this happened. You know, they might have an appointment, and somebody pays them directly because they're not in the insurance pharmacy game, and they might get $20 for a session. Somebody goes in to see the medical doctor, and you know, they get insurance and they get $80 and they get a percentage of the drug sales from the companies that they're supporting and blah, 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 blah. That goes on all the time. And the pharmaceutical industry went to the osteopaths and said, you know, we could make you purveyors of drugs and you'd have a whole new status.
Mm-hmm.
And now the osteopath can prescribe exactly the same way the MD does,
mm-hmm.
and get paid the same way the MD does. And most, my understanding is, and I've taught in a couple of osteopathic schools over the years, my understanding is now at this point, manipulation is almost not spoken of in schools of osteopathy. It's been eradicated, and it's just become another profession that prescribes drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. Sounds good. It gets rid of symptoms, but you'll notice that every time you get rid of one set of symptoms, there's always another drug to handle the symptoms that come from the toxicity of the drug that was used to get rid of the first set of symptoms. So someone who starts on one ends up on another, and on another, and on it goes. So there are a lot of things to become conscious of, and of course, if that arouses hostility or fear in someone, if it inhibits the breath, you know, if the breath is inhibited when that's conversations listened to, then there's work to be done. You know, there's forgiveness to be done to clean out the content of karma-based memory so that we can come to every situation with a truly 100% level of emotional intelligence and refrain from ever replacing the actuality of the moment where, if we're conscious and awake, love is conscious, active, and present. Rather than replacing that, if there's a high level of emotional intelligence, with drama and trauma, perceptual constructs in the past, you know, the one world religion of blame and victimhood, instead of doing that, people stay connected to active present love and have their emotional intelligence intact. That would be my take, and, you know, just some of the factors that need to be looked at to comprehend anything, to be truly holistic. You know, when they said holy, they didn't mean fold your hands and get down on your knees. They meant you need to look at every aspect of the energy system, physical, mental, emotional, relational, financial, nutritional, everything. and when you can consider all, the whole person, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right down to, I'm actually working an article that's called Healing from the Ground Up. And, you know, we've started doing gardens since we moved here to Bristol. And in studying that and learning, and I've been having a blast doing that. But one of the things that really, like, hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, if you look at the pharmaceutical farming that goes on, they call it commercial agriculture, but it's really pharmaceuticals. It's, you'll remember the ads for Better Life Through Chemistry. You know, one of the things that they do in commercial farming is, in many cases, they'll saturate a field with 10 gallons of glyphosate, which there are millions being awarded for the results of glyphosate and the cancers that it causes, but they use 10 gallons of it per acre to make sure that everything in the field is absolutely dead before they plant a seed. And that seed has been genetically modified so that it can withstand all the pesticides that are going to be needed, because there are no natural predators. There is no life in the soil. So it becomes just a place for every kind of pest and every kind of toxic creature to grow and flourish and feed on the dead plants that are growing there. You know, like if you sterilize soil, how do you get life out of death? We've got totally dead soil. And one of the things that I've realized since we started growing here and studying soil is, in order to grow actual food with life in it, you've got to have soil with life in it. If you're not healing from the ground up, you're not healing. If you're eating food that comes out of a field that was absolutely, totally, completely dead and killed and filled with toxic chemicals in order to force this GMO seed to grow into something that looked like food and maybe occasionally had sort of a shadow of the taste of food, if one thinks that's actually food compared to we have life, we have live soil, the organisms are there, you don't have to spray chemicals on it because the food is vital, it's strong, it is not rotting and decaying, so that decay organisms are attracted to it to clean it up. You know, they're called reducer organisms, inside of the body or outside of the body. Reducer organisms are meant to clean up the dead and the decaying. And so you have to keep spraying glyphosate on those kinds of crops because they're dead and decaying. And then, you know, the last thing they do to ripen them is they spray gallons more on the finished wheat or what have you. You know, they talk a lot about how people have got problems with what sort I'm looking for in the wheat. They're allergic to gluten. So you got all this, yeah. You got all this gluten-free stuff. My understanding is they're discovering that a lot of people are quote-unquote supposedly gluten-sensitive. As that was a red herring, it wasn't gluten in the first place. It was the toxicity of glyphosate that they were reacting to.
Very, very, very likely. Very likely.
So in order to be truly holy, we need to heal from the ground up, and food starts in actual live soil. There are organisms, millions of them, billions of them in a cubic inch of soil. But not if you pour 10 gallons of glyphosate on every acre. There's not.
Yeah.
And to get life
not
out of soil, you have to have life.
Yes, I like what you said, from the ground up. And, Michael, I had a terrific
healing from the ground
blessing.
Up.
Yeah. I had a terrific blessing this week of being able to sit with an MD and explain my take and knowledge of this point in my life with what you just explained.
Right.
You could have been there to talk with us. It was a wonderful conversation. We're going to continue it again soon. But my guess would be why we are having such a problem with uptake of minerals is if the plant can't uptake the minerals because of the loss of microbe activity, the pharmaceutical activities that's going on with the soil. Is why we, like you mentioned, from the healing from the ground up, we're not able to get those minerals either.
Yeah. There's got to be bioactivity in the soil to prepare the minerals for uptake. In the same way as you can't go out to the beach or out to the forest and find a handful of rocks and chew on them and get minerals into your body, or go to the beach and take a handful of sand and chew on it to get minerals into your body. They're rocks. They're not available. But when they go through a chelation, what's called chelation in the plant process, is what makes them bioavailable. And in order to be bioavailable in the plant, it takes the organisms in the soil to take those micro rocks called minerals and make them available to the plant so they can become available to us. If those microorganisms aren't there, it doesn't happen. But it's really good for the pharmaceutical industry, for the sorcerers.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying there's never a place for a drug. There absolutely is. In, you know, in cases of crisis and emergency, that can be a lifesaver. But, and what a lot of people don't understand is there's a big difference between life-saving and healing. People think because a life was saved, healing has occurred. No, healing hasn't occurred until healing occurs. If there's such degradation in tissue that the body has these reduced organisms that are multiplying like crazy, they call that an infection. There's a reason for that. You know, the same way as in the field. If the field, if the plants are strong and healthy, the locusts don't touch them. They can't eat it. They fly over it and they look for a weak, unhealthy crop to eat. Well, it's no different in the human body. If the cells in the body are imbalanced and toxic, reducer organisms called bacteria can can multiply like crazy. And yeah, if it becomes dangerous, the infection becomes so dangerous as to threaten life, there's no question. You can give that person an antibiotic and you can save their lives. But if you don't replace the organisms that are designed to be in the structure, you know, you look at the word antibiotic. Bio means life. Anti means against life. Jeannie used to, when I met Jeannie first, she worked in a pharmaceutical company, and they were getting ready to go move to a third world country, so they were closing this plant down, and they had a huge building. I don't remember how big it was, but a huge manufacturing plant and offices and all that of a major pharmaceutical company, and they were trying to sell the building. But the building, having manufactured antibiotics, was so toxic that they could not sell it to any business other than a pharmaceutical business that would be making antibiotics. In their annual report a few years ago, they reported that in order to sell the property, they would have to level the building to the grassy knoll.
Imagine that.
It was so toxic from antibiotics. Now, again, there's a place for it, but if somebody needs the antibiotic because the reduced organisms are going wild, they better get doing some serious healing work, not treatment. You know, treatment, man, it's awesome. It can save a life, but treatment isn't healing work. To me, a medical doctor or a practitioner of health that doesn't put healing beside treatment is in a state of malpractice. And healing looks like, what do we need to do to keep this energy system attuned to what it's designed for? And, you know, if you hold a newborn, invariably you find that the presence, the strongest presence in the newborn is that of active love. And yet we look at adults and, you know, in so many cases you can hardly find the stuff. And it's love it's love moving through a cell that life is made of. Yet our culture's forgotten that. And that's
so
where, and to me, that's why Yeshua was called the great physician. He never practiced medicine. He practiced healing.
Very interesting.
And the technology that he had and the understanding he had is just monumental. And you look at, you know, we've talked about this before, but you look at what he said he was here for. He had a really simple description of what he was here for, and it wasn't dogma, it wasn't doctrine, it wasn't churchianity, it wasn't religion. He said, "I come to bring you life, life more abundantly."
More abundantly.
What is life? Life is love flowing through a cell. Anything that inhibits it creates death. And we have a culture that specializes in death.
So unfortunate, but true. And I like I mentioned, I remember reading that in the book of John. "I've come to bring you life and life more abundantly." And so what is it? Does that mean? Now I'm understanding a little bit more.
Well, look. Go back and look at John, and notice how many times they talk about love. Notice how many ways he brings that point of love forward. And you listen to Paul. He even gets into that one where he says, you know, "Though I give my body to be burned, you know, like I'm being so generous, if I have not love, if I have not human life, I am a tinkling cymbal."
Yes. I want to actually back up for a moment, make sure I was thinking about this correct. Love moving through a cell, that is what you were saying is the definition of health. Is that correct?
No, that would be my definition. That's the best definition I've been able to come up with. That's the definition of life.
Of life, life or health, okay.
Is love moving through a cell. And you take a look at what was going on in the culture when Yeshua arrived, and there wasn't a whole lot of it around.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at his whole conversation from the starting point where they ask him, "Well, what's most important in this thing you call the law? You know, if you want to have a human life, what's most important?" He doesn't say love your neighbor. He doesn't say love God. He doesn't say love yourself. He says have rachma, gateway in the frontal lobes of the brain that is the opening for love to enter the human form. If that gateway is not open, one has a human form, but they don't have a human life, and therefore there is no life there.
Mm-hmm.
No actual life, that is love moving through the cell.
Yes. So I remember clearly my aha moment on Rachma and from the worksheet talks.
Yes.
Just remarkable thought. Remarkable. You know, I want to share a little story with you. Back about, well, it was 30 years ago, I really piqued my interest in health, but I've really been getting into it more the last 20 years. And for the longest time, I couldn't understand why there was a DO and why there was an MD and why they both seemed
right
to do the same work. And no one could tell me why, Michael. I mean, the people I spoke with, I asked many questions, and why, what is this difference? Well, it took a lot of digging on my part, and I finally understand more of it. You know, back to your talk on osteopathy. And we're fortunate. There's a few wonderful DOs out there that are on the internet and actually have a lot of free training that talk with us about the manipulation and the movement of the body and just wonderful things. But I just always found that remarkable that no one seemed to really know or at that time seemed to care. And I don't know how it is now. I haven't asked those questions recently, but
well, as
DOs
I say,
are less and less.
In schools of osteopathy, which is DO, that's what a DO is, a doctor of osteopathy.
Exactly.
Originally, it was all about manipulating body fluids and energy throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that distinction has disappeared because they were offered the opportunity to push drugs.
Yes.
And that's where the money is. You know, that's
amazing.
So there's more and more focus on drug medicine in schools of osteopathy now than there is on healing. And sadly, that's becoming true in some chiropractic schools as well.
Most definitely, from my understanding, yes.
Yep. And it's becoming about pharmacy. If you don't know all about pharmacy, then, hey, how could you possibly be a doctor? Well, actually, you don't need to know anything about pharmacy. But you do have to know about life to bring healing to people from the ground up.
Beautiful. Well, so nice to connect with you all again and appreciate the information, the thoughts. It's always a pleasure to be on. Appreciate the platform here so much.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your questioning mind and your pursuit of truth and the fact that you're playing with us. It's awesome.
It's wonderful. Thank you. And Aria is doing better today still. All's well.
Aria is rocking, yes. Yep.
Oh, wonderful.
She came in here with a big boo to get me moving when she got in from school. She even picked her up.
That's great.
We're actually out. There's a pumpkin farm not far from here. We're going to go out and walk through a pumpkin maze and let her pick out a pumpkin.
That sounds like a world of fun there.
Yeah, we're going to just go have some fun and move in the direction of the next piece of her education.
Great. Great. Well,
all right, sir,
well,
any other thoughts for you today?
Not today, and we'll connect again sometime soon, and sure appreciate y'all.
Okay, sir. Blessings.
Thank you now. Blessings. Bye-bye now.
All right. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, we don't on either place. So we have 7 minutes. So if somebody presses one, we've got time. And while we're waiting for somebody to press one, remind everybody this Saturday is breath work.
Oh, yes, yeah, Saturday, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, 11 o'clock Eastern Time. And then on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. So if you're interested in joining us for the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing work, you can join us for that. If you're not currently a part of that ongoing study, you need to register. And you can register for just one session or a package for three sessions, or it's an annual event. It goes on for a year. And, or actually, it's going to go on forever. People can sign up for anything from a single session to 3 months to a year. And so if you're interested in that, drop Jeannie a note, or if you've got my phone number, you're certainly welcome to call me. And her email is Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And if you're out there in listener land and you're listening on one of those stations where we can't hear you and this conversation has sparked anything for you, it'd be awesome to hear your voice. And again, if you're on one of those stations where you can't call in, you can just dial our call-in number, which is 563-999-3581. That will mean that you're listening to the show on your phone directly. And then if you push one, that raises a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know you want to speak to us, and we'll be having a conversation. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there with a hand up?
No, we don't. And,
no,
you know, we are
don't.
Blessed with, we have a physician here in Bristol who actually had been introduced to Michael's work back in Anderson, was it Anderson, Indiana? Lady
yes,
Jane
several,
was?
A couple of decades ago, yeah, where Jane was, yeah.
Yeah. And so when he heard that we were here too, I mean, he had us do workshops in their conference room, and he's super supportive and actually had Michael write a chapter for his book when he wrote a book. But he's an MD, but he looks at the whole you know, and if you check, you can find one. Just you have to ask and question. But, you know, he, like, looks at the mind, body, and the spirit, and he's awesome as far as, like, I remember one time, it was like all my blood work was real screwed up and everything was out of whack. And he said, you know, he said, it's not that your sugar's high or that your cholesterol's high. He said, your hormones are low. He said, if we get your hormones back in balance, he said, everything else will take care of itself. You know, and so he looks at the whole picture and not just, oh, you've got high blood pressure, you've got high sugar, let's give you this drug. And so, you know, ask and talk to your physician and you'll find one. And anyway, we do have a hand up. We've got 4 minutes.
Great.
I believe
let's
this is
hello.
Ann, 760.
Hey, young lady.
You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah,
welcome,
I
welcome.
Ask for the community. Thank you. I'm traveling back home to Ocala, Florida from South Carolina, so I'll be stopping in about 45 minutes to charge my car and walk around and get something to eat.
Nice.
But just asking for traveling, you know, thoughts and prayers as I get back home. And for
so you're looking
also,
for travel blessings.
Yeah.
We'll send them in your direction.
Yes, thank you very much. And also continued healing for my daughter. They had gotten sick on their trip. And, of course, I was around them the last couple of days. However, also one of the dogs injured his paw, we think, part of his leg, of course. But, God just helped me to take care of that because they weren't home yet, and just massage and just get her and talk, you know, talk softly to her and just reassure her and everything until they got home. And they got her to the vet this morning, and they're going to have to sedate her because when you start probing around on that one, she doesn't have any of it. But we're believing for healing in that. So healing all around. Thank you.
Yay. Well, we're sending it in your direction.
Appreciate it. And was blessed
all right.
to hear about Aria, and at some point I'll get a small package up to there. So I have your Bristol address. So.
Cool. Sweet. Awesome, young lady. You have a blessed
all
right. one.
All
right.
All
take
right.
care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Miss Jeannie, we're down to about 2 minutes, so... Anything else happening in the chat room? Any other thoughts?
No, it is all quiet.
Does Aria Rain have a thought for us? Ask Aria if she's got anything to share with Papaw.
Aria, do you have any thoughts to share with Papaw or the radio, the people listening on the radio show? No? Why are we here? Did you hear that? To be love.
I heard it. To be love. That's it. Yay. We are with you on that, Aria Rain. Thank you for being in our world. We are blessed by you. Did you know that? We're blessed by you. Do you know what
she
it means
said, yeah,
to be blessed, sweetie? Yeah. Do you know what
she
it means
said, yes,
to be blessed? Yeah.
No.
Well, you uplift us in our love. You uplift us in our lives. And you just bring joy. Your blessing, you just bring joy to everything you touch. So appreciate you a lot. And we're glad you came into this family. And we hold you in a blessing too.
She just gave the phone a kiss.
All right. Thank you, sweetie. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. I hope your day is blessed and that you have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. It's a gift you're capable of giving. It's a gift the world certainly needs. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.